Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Motis, and I'm your host, a Filipina-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration, to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to our sponsors, TrueLearn and PicMonic. PicMonic is an excellent learning resource and study aid for occupational therapy and occupational therapy assistant students, whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam. PicMonic is the only visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams through the use of audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. How I wish I had a learning tool like this back when I was in OT school. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes or code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your PicMonic membership. Happy studying. So welcome back, OT friends. Today, I'm super excited to be joined by two incredible OTs who both have worked and provided services to individuals experiencing homelessness. We have with us today Dr. Quinta Minsky and Serena Blank, both OTs who have provided services at the St. Patrick Center. The St. Patrick Center is an organization that works to increase access to sustainable housing, employment, and healthcare in the St. Louis region. So here to tell us more about the incredible work that they've done and that they continue to do, I'd like to welcome Dr. Quinta Minsky and Serena Blank. Welcome to the podcast, ladies.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm super excited to finally have two OTs to talk about a non-traditional area or an emerging practice area up to today, right? That I equally feel super passionate about. So let's delve right into it. I'd love for you to, maybe start by telling us a little bit about your backgrounds. Tell us a little bit about your favorite occupations.
Yeah. Serena, would you like to start?
Yeah. So I've been an occupational therapist for 4 years. Majority of my career has been in different community-based mental health settings. So my first job was a fellowship in Durham, North Carolina, that was at a VA, and it was focused on psychosocial rehabilitation and recovery. That was during COVID. So in the brunt of that, I had to move back to be closer to friends and family. And then I started working with people who were incarcerated through a program at my alma mater through St. Louis University. And I worked with people who were incarcerated in a city jail in downtown St. Louis. And I helped them transition from being incarcerated and back out in the community. And the whole goal of the program was to reduce recidivism rates. And then I transitioned to working with people who were experiencing homelessness. And that is where I worked at the St. Patrick Center. And I provided services to people all on the spectrum of being homeless or in shelter, and then all the way up to them being housed and sustainably housed. And some of my favorite occupations are, walking my dog, spending time with my family and friends, going on bike rides, and watching Netflix.
Great. Thank you.
All right. So I have been an occupational therapist for 10 years now. I graduated with my master's from Washington University in 2012. And about 1 month into OT school, I had the chance to see community-based mental health OT in a level one fieldwork. Absolutely fell in love with it and never looked back. So from there on, I think I knew that that was the path that I was going to take. I have pretty much worked in community-based mental health settings since then. I spent 5 years at an agency here in St. Louis that's similar to St. Patrick's Center. It serves individuals with serious mental illness and a history of substance abuse. And usually the clients had sort of a history of homelessness, though they were not acutely homeless because we did house them. And so they were in transitional housing with us for a period of 2 years while they learned skills to sort of transition into either independent housing or permanent supportive housing or something like that. So I worked there for several years, became the clinical director of that agency. And during that time, I went back to get my post-professional doctorate at St. Louis University. During that time was when I actually began working in the unhoused population. So that agency that I was working for was part operator of the largest shelter in the St. Louis area at the time. And so I happened one day to walk into the shelter and sort of take a look around. And I was like, oh, this is an extreme state of occupational deprivation. Like they couldn't have the TV on at certain times. There was a computer lab, but they couldn't access it. It was kind of like this light bulb moment for me of like, oh, this is where OT needs to be. And so my capstone for my post-professional OTD was offering 6 months of pro bono OT services through two fieldwork rotations that I would supervise to demonstrate to them the effectiveness of occupational therapy. And at the end of 6 months, they said, this is the most beneficial service we've ever brought through the door. Would you be willing to join us at the St. Patrick Center? And that is actually how the clinic got started. And then I transitioned to being a full-time faculty member back at Washington University. And so that was sort of a beautiful series of events, because then I could transition the clinic to being a student-run clinic that where, you know, my salary is paid by WashU. And so I get to bring students in and didn't have to sort of like initially tangle with the, like, how do I get paid to do this sort of experience for a few years, which we did tangle with down the road to get Serena hired. But yeah, so then the clinic has now been up and running for 7 years. This is our seventh year. Yeah. So, and then, Yeah. So I'm still a full-time faculty member at WashU. I'm also working part-time on my PhD in education. And then favorite occupations. I have a one-year-old, so I don't know at this point. Something relaxing would be my answer. Sitting down, listening to music, reading a good book, doing a crossword puzzle. Quiet occupations.
Oh, wow. Thanks so much for sharing all of that, both of you. What a dream. You talked about the inception of the program. I mean, this is just something that we, I don't know, us psychosocial community-based OTs dream about, right? We think of a place and we think, oh gosh, I see the need here. But for us to prove, right, to prove our value, and then for the other person or for the higher ups over there to really kind of see that value, and then boom. What do you think? Would you be available to come back? I mean, what a dream. Congratulations.
Yeah, I never in my wildest dreams 7 years ago could have imagined that the clinic is what it is today, that we would have full-time therapists, that we would, you know, be looking at expanding, that we would be churning out the research that we are, that we would be so deeply embedded and what I want to say, relied upon, respected by the agency that we are. Like, it is just something that I never could have in my wildest dreams imagined.
Well, I believe it. I believe it. And I, you know, I'm glad that they're seeing the value and that they're, you know, and obviously they're seeing the results, right? Because that's really what's driving these decisions. They see the impact that your programs are making on the population that they're serving. So thank you for that. I think it's important for our listeners to hear that there are a variety of ways and how these programs get developed, right? But most, I think the common theme that I'm hearing from other clinicians out there is that there has to be, like, you kind of really have to show the funders, again, the difference, the change that your department or your service can make. And once you've been able to kind of show that through successes, right? Through success stories, then it's usually a no-brainer.
Yes, I think that's a really important point. And I want Serena to talk a little bit about how she consistently demonstrated her worth when she was in the position. But I don't want, like, we say that we've done all these, you know, all of this wonderful work, but I don't want people to think it wasn't without trials and tribulations. This took perseverance. There, we hit so many walls and hit so many no's. And the number of times I had to stand up in front of the board and tell them what OT was and what the heck I was doing there is numerous. And so, yes, both like the OT before Serena, and then Serena did an amazing job continually proving her worth. So I would love if you would share a little bit about the work you did, Serena, because it was invaluable.
Yeah. I like to, especially like when I'm talking to people, I like to make it known that like, if we're not present in a space, no one's going to know that we're there. One's going to think about OT. So the year and a half that I worked at St. Pat's, I made sure that I took up as much space as I could, and making sure that I went to as many different programs, and be able to see as many clients as I can. St. Patrick's Center is a very large agency. There's about 20 or 30 different programs or grants that are operating within the one agency. And I was only OT, and I was responsible for being able to capture all of that. So it was a lot of trial and tribulations, but I made an effort to just go out and, you know, pitch my services and then kind of show my worth through the benefits of OT for our clients, and whether that be groups or individual sessions or just, you know, short presentations, really just making as much effort as I can to provide to the clients that we serve.
Beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to work with the population?
Yeah, I can go first. So I was really interested in sort of individuals with serious mental illness and substance use when I came into OT school, just because I, you know, it was something I didn't know a ton about. And so I think like sort of the unknown was interesting to me. And then when I visited and did my level one field work, I became so intrigued by this population because they were so fun. And I just felt like they were someone I could connect with, that I could laugh with them and we could joke. Like I said, those individuals were not in the house, but then when I went to the shelter and started working with individuals on house, I felt that same connection of like, this is a population that so often gets stigmatized and written off as being, you know, for whatever reason, lazy or stupid or, you know, unworthy. And they're not, they're some of the most smart, well-resourced, enjoyable people. Like Serena will tell you, we spend a lot of time laughing. Like we have some really enjoyable times together. And I don't think that often is what you think of when you work with this population.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, for me, I really got interested in this type of work or working with individuals that were more pushed out on the outskirts of society in OT school. I have a bachelor's degree in occupational science, which is something that's really unique about the program at St. Louis University. So it was really ingrained into our curriculum of learning about these different occupational injustices. And then, you know, seeing those firsthand, it's kind of like, well, how do you not do something about it? When you become a practitioner. So that's kind of what led me to this type of work. And then what keeps me is kind of what Quinn said, like the relationships that you build with our clients, they're the most resilient people I've ever met. And despite everything that they're going through, they're smiling. They're so much fun to be around. It's just a joy to be able to work with them, and such a privilege.
I couldn't agree more. I have such a great time at work every day. I tell my students all the time, you know, it's not like this everywhere.
Yeah, right?
It's not like this everywhere. Before our interview, we were just unveiling our brand new karaoke machine that we just got, because we have such fabulous karaoke groups here. We're in Los Angeles. Yeah, we're in Los Angeles. So we have actors, singers, just natural performers as part of our community here.
I love
it. We have a lot of talent.
I love it. They're planning a really fun group for next week where they're trying to do some like anger, and they're going to take like a big piece of paper and have everybody write like what they're stressed about on. And then they're going to take ice outside and they're going to throw it at it. And then like the paper will like bleed down. And like, ooh, you know, I'm like, oh, that's so fun. Like, where else do you get to like throw stuff?
I love the symbolism. I love that. Okay, I might steal that idea.
Do it.
Because we have a wonderful space here too. It's brand spanking new. We have a great like just foliage and sitting areas. So we try to take advantage of our you know, outdoor things and do as many groups as we can out there. So I think that might actually work.
There you go. But
thank you so much for sharing some of that with us. I think we all have that in common, it seems, where, you know, field work really solidified things. Like, I knew right away during my psychosocial, my mental health placement, that I was like, you know, this is it. I feel really effective in this role. I'm good at this. Like, this is the kind of OT work that I want to be doing. But that wasn't really so available. You know, 20 years ago, there were very few jobs like this back then. However, again, you know, part of why I have you on the podcast is so that we can share the work that we do, right? And then to let others know that these jobs exist. It's out there. And, you know, you need to seek it out, right? Because it's not common. It's not going to be written on a job posting in the traditional way that other OT jobs are posted. They're usually obtained through word of mouth. They're usually, you know, it's all about networking and whom you know. But what I really want folks to know out there is that these jobs exist, and you have to just look for it and network with those who are in the field. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. And I always tell students, if this is the job, the type of job you want, you have to be willing to fight for it. I hear so many students who tell me, like, I'm really interested in this kind of community-based mental health work. This is the type of job I want. But then, you know, they get out into the market and you can't find them right away. And I'm like, you know, and they kind of give up. And I'm like, you've got to be willing to take maybe a PRN job or something part-time. I ended up actually working in inpatient rehab for 3 months. It was the most miserable 3 months of my life. I was awful at it. But like, that's what I had to do until a mental health job opened up. And you, like, that's what I mean. You gotta fight. You gotta wait it out. You really have to put in the work.
Yeah. The reason why I ended up at St. Pat's was because I previously, in my role working with people at the jail, I had held a meeting with my boss at St. Pat's. I was asking about like, what do I do for these clients who enter into the jail homeless and then, you know, are exiting and they don't have any services. And Rachel remembered my name and was like, hey, like, I think I know you. Like, do you want to come in and interview? And that's part of why I got the job. So networking is very important.
Every OT we've hired for your position, the position at St. Pat's, has been someone who has spent time in the clinic prior or has been in a similar position prior. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I like that seeking it out advice. I've even had students who also seeked me out or seeked out the placements, right? Because that was the kind of experience that they were looking for. So, you know, that's possible too. Like, even before the job, right? You can seek out a field work experience that really matches with your passions and, you know, whatever it is that you want, the population that you want to offer the services to.
Yeah. I mean, so we operate the student run clinic. That's part of what we do at St. Pat's. And we take, so at WashU, we both have both master's and doctoral students, and we take both master's and doctoral students into the student run clinic, but we can only take a certain number of them. And it's a very small percentage of their cohort. And I feel very strongly about taking those students who come to me and say, like, this is what I want to do. Because there's a lot of students coming to me and they're like, I want a clinical experience. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. But there's other places to do that. But when those students come to me and like, I want to do mental health, I'm like, okay, like, there's so few opportunities for you that like, I want to give you this.
Yes. I find that there's also a lot of students out there who say to me, yeah, I'm interested in working with this population, right? But interested is real more like they're curious and they just kind of want to be a fly on the wall to see what's going on at these sites, right?
Yeah.
So I get that a lot. And I, you know, I, that's different from being really interested.
You got to be committed.
So this might be a good segue into having you describe for us the uncommon OT work that you're doing.
Yeah. So I don't know, Serena, this might be a great place for you to kind of talk about the job at St. Patrick's Center.
Yeah. So at St. Pat's, again, I'm the only occupational therapist in this very large nonprofit providing these services. So my day looks different on a daily basis. Majority of my time was spent providing services to clients individually. Again, they can be at any point in their process of getting housed. They could be on the street, in shelter, in transitional housing, or fully housed. We also provide group services. So that would be to individuals that are in certain day programs, in workforce programs, or in veteran programs at our agency. And then another part of my work is just advocating for services. So that's attending meetings, supervising students, anything to make the presence of OT known within the agency.
Yeah. And so then alongside that full-time OT position, we have this student-run clinic. And so the student-run clinic has been around, like I said, for 7 years. And then 3 years into that, we have finally got funding through grant funding for the full-time occupational therapist position, which is the position that Serena is in. And so the student-run clinic meets one day a week. They provide group-based services. It is fully run by students. I'm there to supervise, but I do really try to give a lot of autonomy to the students. And, you know, the students generally do life skills, health management, symptom management, but our clinic is really designed to be a place that that the individuals can feel very a lot of choice over, and that they feel like they have a lot of representation in. And so we usually allow the clients to sort of give us ideas about what they would like to learn about next, what they would like the next life skills topics to be. So they sort of dictate where we're going next. Obviously, like if we see a need come up, like for example, if we start hearing a lot of like interpersonal conflicts, we might be like, oh, okay, I think we need to run some like communication conflict resolution groups in the next month or so. But like, you know, we'll also say like, what do you want to learn this semester? Where, you know, where do we want to go? And they'll be like, we want to learn about budgeting, or we're really interested in cleaning. And so that is a lot of how we make sure that it stays away from sort of like white saviorism. You know, we really want the clients to feel that they have a space there. So the students come in, they're in the group, they document, and then they get to plan everything. We also, in the clinic, we put a lot of emphasis on the environments of being unhoused. And so all of our interventions are really focused on sort of those environments. So for example, when we're talking about like nutrition, or we're talking about cooking, we're not talking about going to the grocery store. We're talking about like, what's the cheapest thing that's healthy that you can get at McDonald's for $5, mm-hmm. right? Or like what can you cook with a microwave and a can opener and a Tupperware container? That mm-hmm. is much more about how we are devising our interventions. And so that's a lot of like what we're also educating the students on as well, is how, you know, how are we changing our interventions to really meet these clients where they're at?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we're also conducting research that is very, I want to say controlled, and very like particular about the research that is conducted. I actually sit on a committee of the board for St. Patrick's Center at this point. And so all of our research has to pass through them. But we only conduct research that is either designed to improve our understanding of the clients or to benefit the agency in some way. So we've done a lot of research around like different occupations of this population so that we can better understand. Mm-hmm. And we looked at menstruation management for individuals experiencing homelessness. We looked at sleep. We've looked at cognition to better understand how to provide services But then we've also devised some programming that has been asked for. So we've done some health management programming that has been asked for by St. Patrick's Center. That cognition project actually parlayed into a staff training on cognition that is part of the intake for all new St. Patrick's Center staff. Okay. And so, yeah.
Oh, I love, there's so many, yes, I love the thoughtfulness. Like, so I love it because I can relate, right? Because I feel like a lot of the work that I'm doing also centers around not just working with the folks that we serve, but also the organizations that we work for, right? And the staffing that's there. So, you know, doing in-service trainings on how occupational therapy can really assist in this particular problem area that we might be finding, right? Or this need that we just kind of identified. So I love that. And I'm going to pick your brains more because I just started this position in January and things are growing very fast. And, but OT is also, you know, we're also making a great impact here and community building and, you know, giving folks opportunity to participate in these occupations that they have not participated in a long, long time, right? And particularly because the place is so nice and so new, folks are able to really kind of come in, rest, right? And really kind of relax and I can't even think of a better word, they're rested. They look rested. They look rested, and because of that, they're motivated and they're interested in participating in a lot of the things that we have to offer here. So
that is rare, like that you have a nice facility.
I have never worked anywhere nicer. I'm going to send you guys a video.
Please do, because
yeah.
We're kind of used to working in like a little bit of like some crummy settings. That's just, I kind of have just chalked that up to that's community mental health OT.
Yeah.
I've worked always in the basements, in some dingy basement in New York City, no windows, you know, it was always that no ventilation. Dark, you know,
I've had mice in the before, sea level. Yep.
So this, I have a window. I mean, even sun that comes through when it's sunny. It's wonderful. I'm very, very happy here. But not just me. I feel that our participants are also very happy here because they're, again, I see less fatigue. I see more interest in pursuing things, setting goals, right? Which I think sometimes in other settings where it's just dark and not so positive, how can you possibly think of positive future things if you're not in that kind of space, right? So yeah. I will definitely pick your brain, but I want to bring us back to some of our questions. And thanks for describing, you know, the setting. I just want to clarify the population that you serve are both men and women, and they're all adults.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we do. Some youth, so like youth ages 18 to 24 are also okay. Like a subset of the homeless population that is served at St. Pat's.
Got it. Now, and you mentioned that there's St. Pat's is pretty big and there's about 20 or so programs. Which programs is occupational therapy in?
Yeah, many. So I'm specifically housed in the coordinated entry division. So my specific program that I'm housed in works with people who are coming in off the street and enrolling in services. So enrolling in the housing list. So I have access to those clients immediately when they walk through the doors of St. Pat's and maybe are initially experiencing homelessness for the first time. Sometimes not, but sometimes we do get those clients. The student-led clinic is housed in our mental health day program called the Shamrock Club. And it is been in there for 7 years now. And then I also have been providing services in our emergency shelter or new safe haven. That's a low barrier shelter for both men and women. We've been in the veteran transitional housing programs where veterans are housed up to 2 years. We've been in the workforce program. So individuals that are seeking employment or different training programs, they have like barista trainings, they have janitorial programs, things like that. And then I also see clients that are in our rapid rehousing and permanent supportive housing programs.
Got it. I love that you're in all levels of care.
Yes. Yeah. And we are looking at expanding right now. We're actually in talks to like write some grants and figure out ways to get some more occupational therapists in some greater programs.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a need. I mean, it's only you right now, Serena, and there's what you mentioned, 7 different programs already. We'll talk about that in a sec. Just like what a typical day is like for you and where you end up, I guess, in you know, kind of what you end up doing. Right. But before we get there, I know we talked about both of you kind of knowing from the start that this was the area that you wanted to concentrate on. But can you describe to our listeners a little bit more about your path? Like, how did you get from OT school to kind of doing this type of work? And I know, Quinn, you're now also full-time faculty at WashU. So, yeah, just a little bit about how that all happened.
Go ahead, Serena.
All right. So I am so thankful to the OTs that have been in positions before me that have helped lead me on this path. So when I first went out of school, I knew about this fellowship opportunity in North Carolina because I knew an OT from my school that had already done it, who's also an amazing mental health OT in St. Louis still. So I was lucky that I learned about this opportunity through her. And then the program that I then stepped into, in which I worked with people who were incarcerated, I actually was a student working on that program when it was first developed. So it kind of came full circle and I was able to like step into that role as a full-time OT. And then again, like I'm so thankful that the only reason why I have the opportunity to work at St. Pat's is because of all of the heavy lifting that Quinn had done for years prior to advocate for the role. So really, I owe a lot of the work that I'm able to do because of OTs that have had the passion and drive to make the pass for me.
Yes, I would echo a lot of that. I think there were a lot of people that were instrumental in getting me to where I am. I cannot understate the importance of mentorship. Mm-hmm. That is truly how I have succeeded. So I mentioned that, you know, I wanted to do mental health OT. I graduated OT school with my master's. And I took my first mental health job. Like I did that little 3-month stint in inpatient rehab. I was the worst inpatient rehab OT that ever existed. truthfully. And then I had only been out of school 3 months when I took this job as the only OT at an agency. And thankfully, this OT who was actually leaving the position to be a fieldwork coordinator offered to be my mentor. And she met with me every Friday for the entire first year. And just out of the goodness of her heart. And she would sit down and I'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing. These clients won't listen to me. Like I'm 24 years old. I'm working with like grown men who have had much more life experience. I know my communication skills aren't right. And so she was instrumental. She was also the one that was like, you know, as I was starting to do all these guest lectures, because I had this really unique OT job, she was the one that was like, you know, you might consider going back for a post-professional OTD, you know, if you're liking this teaching thing. And so she was the one that sort of like opened that door to me. And so then like, once I went back for my post-professional OTD and, you know, got that underway, it was actually my mentor from my master's OT degree who was like, hey, you know, WashU is hiring someone to teach the mental health classes because I'm retiring. And I think that you would be a really great person. So it's again, like these people who had like mentored me, who had opened doors for me, who had created these positions, you know, and so like I have, now that I've had that great fortune, like I've really tried to do that for my own students, like mm-hmm. So for students that I have graduated, I have really tried to put them in these roles to get them those opportunities to, you know, open those same doors for them. Cause I think that like we have to give back to the future generation.
Yes. Well, it sounds like that's happening already with your relationship with Serena and kind of the passing of the baton in that way.
And the person that we actually hired to replace Serena is actually was Serena's fieldwork student and one of the students from the clinic.
it's all in the family.
Yeah, she's doing her capstone there right now. And then she'll start, I think she just told me September 11th. She's going to be absolutely phenomenal. By the way, her office looks amazing. And I'm really afraid it's going to flood. But that's just a side note.
Yeah, OT is, it's such a small world. The more that you're in it and the more that you meet people, like Quinn's mentor was my fieldwork coordinator when I went to school. Like, we just know so many of the same
people. And her
people.
Fieldwork coordinator was at fieldwork with my mentor, who's the one that was retired. Like, it's a long cycle of mentoring.
Yes, it really is. And I'm so, yeah, like, it's so interracial. Like, in, yeah, we just all know each other and I love it. Yeah. And I love
intergenerational love. Intergenerational, yes. OTs.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And, you know, is now also, right now we kind of have this like subspecialty of like OTs that work with unhoused or with those experiencing homelessness, or even trying to start a community of practice. I think I may have mentioned that to you, Serena, over here. So I'll definitely be in touch with you both once we have that a little bit more organized. Because yeah, we want to start off with like smaller meetings. And again, it's just so we can exchange information. So this might be a really good time to ask you both, or, you know, whomever wants to answer, really, like, can you describe for us what a typical day might be like, a typical session? Yeah, basically a typical day, something that you can share with us that may transpire there.
I'll let you take that.
Yeah, I can speak to it. And Quinn and I are working on a mutual project right now that's focusing on a case study of someone that we work with. So that just kind of is in my mind right now because I was working on it earlier today. So typical sessions with clients, of course, it's client-centered and like always meeting the needs of the client, whether that be like this beautiful plan session that I have focused on a goal, or if that is all crisis management. it kind of depends on the day and the hour, kind of what I'm stepping into. But I think a lot of the things and the occupations that I'm focused on are like working on getting people to take that next step so that they can be more involved in the ADLs or the IADLs that they want and need to do. So like this client, it was really focused on like, he needed a food stamp application in Missouri. So, cause he had it in California and he just moved here and kind of getting all settled. And of course, like getting food stamps necessarily isn't that skilled of a service that I could provide of like filling out an application, but that led us to this whole other area of like, what is shopping going to look like? What is meal prep going to look like? What is like spending time with your sister going to look like? Is it going to be like having meals with her? All these different things that this is going to help this person be able to do. You know, not everything that I do is 100% occupation based in that moment. It always has that larger goal of like, we're going to do these things now. And maybe they're not necessarily exactly what an OT typically does, but we know that that's going to get you to the things that you want and love and need to do at the very end. And then, you know, that person was staying in a shelter. So then there was a whole other factor of like, how do we look for housing in a skilled productive way. So, you know, that's the computer skills, that's the using public transportation so that you can get to these apartment showings, that's the social communication of like talking on the phone with a landlord, like all of these things that when you look at it firsthand, it maybe doesn't seem like an OT has to do that. But then when you like peel back the onion, you're like, of course, an OT needs to be doing this because there's so many different, you know, skills that are involved in these things.
Yes.
I think you did a great job. And the only thing I would add to emphasize, so my job is very different because I am full-time faculty. And so, you know, I get to spend my one day in the clinic, but I will just emphasize that when I worked in community mental health, no day was the same. And so, and that was one of the things I loved and / didn't like about inpatient rehab is I very much didn't like an inpatient rehab when I would like schedule my 3 bathes and dresses in the morning and then schedule the rest of my, you know, my interventions for the rest of the day. I loved that about community mental health. I walk in and maybe there's a crisis. Maybe my client just now told me that they need to go to the doctor for the day. And now we're going to spend the whole day at the doctor because that's an endeavor. Like, it's, you just don't know. And I kind of loved that about it. I loved like being out in the community, like we're going to Target. All right, here we go. You know, I always tell students there's nothing more functional than like being at Walmart with a client who like doesn't have enough money to pay for all of the things that they have on the belt and trying to figure that out. Like that's as functional as you get.
Yes. We've been doing walking groups around here recently and just getting to know the neighborhood, right? Everyone doesn't know the neighborhood. They just got here. So a lot of folks are just, you know, familiarizing. So that's been kind of interesting because I'm new to the neighborhood too. So that's been fun and just really functional, right? I was surprised by the amount of people who were interested in coming along. I thought it was kind of a silly thing, like, oh, we're going to go for a walk. But people were genuinely interested and they wanted to get out. They wanted to leave the facility with in safety, right? Because there are quite a few of us. So just these small activities that you think very, you know, very little value will come out of it, but you're really surprised by the returns that you get.
Yeah.
And the participation. So thank you for describing for us some of that. Can you think of any specific OT skills that kind of are highlighted in terms of, OT skills that you might use most often in your current roles?
The one that comes to mind that I had to learn very quickly and really hone my first year in community mental health practice is communication. That is key. That, like, you will be tested in your ability to communicate. Hands down.
Yes.
I agree with that. And I think going off of that, also like motivational interviewing, like being able to effectively communicate and get answers out of people in a productive way, that's going to help them grow.
Yeah. Yes. All like everything under that umbrella. I agree. Yep. Yeah. Conflict resolution, like motivational interviewing, stages of change, like everything under communication.
Yes. What about, I know we talked a little bit about, and this is, I'm mentioning this has come up a lot in the last few days. What about limit setting?
Yes, we are
setting boundaries.
We actually had a group today that we had two clients who were both quite, like, they were both quite mentally ill and actually needed much higher level care than the organization could provide. But, you know, that's what happens in community service organizations is you deal with what you're dealt. And so we had to do a lot of limit setting, and I actually have a new crop of students right now. They just started a couple of weeks ago, so they're in the training wheels part. And so, yes, we had to have a long conversation about like, where should we have stopped that? And like, what limits should we have set on that client? I think that's one of the most important skills as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned, also being very mindful of your approach, right? And it's super trauma informed. Can you speak to that a little bit and how you apply that model in your programs?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, our clients come in and a lot of times the first thing they hear is no. And that just sets them on a path of like, yeah, I would be so disheartened if every time I seeked out help, that was the first answer that I got. And it's so unfortunate that that's what happens a lot of times in these settings is that's kind of like the expectation of what someone's going to receive. So I always try to like approach it with like open ears and like, maybe I don't have the answer right now. And like, maybe right now it's a no, but how can we maybe work towards a yes or work towards a change? And I think that's the biggest part about being trauma-informed is like knowing how you're going to approach someone who, you know, you don't know what their day has been like, or you don't know what has led them to this point. So coming with like empathy and open ears is so important in any conversation that you have.
Yes. Do you want to add anything, Quinn?
I think I'll just say like, one of the things that has been really important to us in the clinic has been power differentials and really mitigating power differentials. And I think this comes back to like limit setting, but also the trauma informed, in that everything we do is designed to try to put everyone, including the clients, like on a level playing field inside the four walls of our clinic and inside of, like, so that's where the OT is housed and that's where the clinic is housed. It's all the same room. So that space is a space that when they walk into, they're not, it's not that no, it's like, let's work on this collaboratively. And that's everything from like how we dress. Like I tell students, you know, this is not a polo space. This is not a khakis and polo space. This is a jeans. And like, you know, we're going to look like our clients. I've had some MDs who have come through and I'm like, you're not going to wear a white coat here. Like, I don't even think our clients think of us as healthcare providers, and I'm A-okay with that. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we give them choice in what they're doing. We have clients who literally will come down to OT, purely for the fact that that's a space that they like, even if like they don't want to participate in group that day. We had one today who literally was like, you know, I just like being here. It's a place that I'm calm. I'm just going to sit in the corner and like color. And we're like, that's fine. And clients say things like, this is the only place that I feel heard. This is the only place that I feel like I have a voice. This is the only place I feel happy. This is the best hour of my week because of that. You know, those efforts, like Serena was talking about, you know, we're doing trauma-informed care, we're mitigating power differentials, we're giving them autonomy. That's what OT is trying to do uniquely that a lot of other professions don't pick up on.
Yeah. I had a client one time when the students weren't there over the winter time because they were on winter break, and it was a new client to the facility. And he definitely thought that we were doing like physical therapy. So he came down to group and I was like, well, we're doing crafts today. And he's like, okay, well, I'm actually just going to lay on the floor because that feels really good. So like for the whole hour, I go check in and be like, you're doing okay. And he'd be like, yeah, I'm doing great. And that's what he needed, was to lay on the floor. And I was like, of course you can come. You know, you can't lay down upstairs, but sure, you can lay on my floor.
Yeah, but right in a
difference to me.
Right in a different part of the building, I'm sure that they would have been like, no, this isn't acceptable. And they would have come up with a reason. But like, but why not? Like, if he needs to lay down on the floor for an hour, why not?
Yeah. No. Yeah. I love giving options too, and the choices, right? And I love everything that you're seeing because it's validating me inside. Yeah, there's been some challenges this week that I'm kind of like, but no, you know, this is their community.
You're doing the right thing.
Yes, this is their community. It's their say. It's their event. We're here to help, you know, smooth it out, but not to necessarily impart our, you know, our biases on there, right? So I think this field still has a lot to learn as far as that is concerned, but I love hearing that your programs already kind of follow that that way of operating, and that you're teaching your students there this way of operating, right? I mean, we didn't talk about this in OT school 20 years ago either. This was not something that we discussed. So this
yeah, is really I think a white savior complex is always in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's something that I'm always like, is that what we're embodying? Is that what we're doing here? And so I'm always looking for ways to make sure that that's not what's happening in the four walls of the clinic, you know, and so this is like, I've read as much as I can, you know, like where we are, we try to be as much partnered with the agency as opposed to like coming into the agency and telling them what's going to happen. Like they lead a lot of it. Like I say that my relationship with that agency is the most important relationship that I have. I have protected it, sometimes having to fight tooth and nail to protect it from people. To, you know, to really demonstrate to them, like, no, we're in it for the long haul. When I first started the clinic, people at the agency would come up to me and be like, when are you all leaving? And I would be like, I'm not leaving. Like, you all are stuck with me. And now to this day, I have the head of their custodial team. I actually have known her now for 7 years. And she came up to me today and she was talking about how I've like watched her. She started on their crew, who was actually like their sort of like a job training crew. And like, I've watched her go through where she runs the custodial team. And so, you know, just like moments like that, where you like, you know, we're part of this agency. We're not just like coming in as outsiders and telling you what to do. Like we have invested.
Yes. Oh. Congrats on that. I know that took years. That's a great feeling. I remember when I worked in New York, I worked for an agency for 15 years. So one of my coworkers used to always say, Patricia, you're part of the building. Like you couldn't even separate me from the building because I was just part of it.
Part of the crew, part of the ship.
Yes. And she didn't just mean Patricia, but she meant occupational therapy. And I found that to be heartwarming because to me it showed that, you know, we weren't going anywhere. They knew how important we were and that we were part of we were part of the plan.
And that's right? So important.
Yes. Such a great environment you've created there. I'm so happy for you. This might be a good time to talk about some challenges. And, you know, and you may have mentioned some already. Maybe we'll start off with some challenges and end off with some recent successes.
Yeah. Ooh, which challenges do we start with? my gosh. I think I'll talk about like sort of the more like overview challenges, and then Serena can talk more about the day-to-day challenges that she experiences as the OT. I think from more of like the logistical point of view, you know, there was the challenge of like it took us 4 years to get a full-time OT, and all that time it was me advocating for it, and then we had to write the grant and wait for the grant funding to come in. You know, the challenge of you know, making sure that it's a well-funded position and that like it's salaried at an appropriate rate, and so that we can keep an OT, as well as, you know, making sure that like once the clinic started to have some success, we found that like other folks wanted to come in, like MDs and other professions, and having to say like, I'm open to professional collaboration. I love interprofessional collaboration, but at the same time, like, this is my relationship with the agency, and like you're going to go through me, because they were very reticent to let us in at first because they had so many poor research relationships with our institution, where psychiatrists had come in and done one-off med studies and left their clients. And so, you know, really demonstrating like our ethics was a huge challenge. And then now the challenge that we're fighting right now is like, okay, we have now had for like 4 years, one OT, and now we need a lot more OTs. And where do we go to do that?
Yes.
So many challenges.
Thanks for sharing some of those.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, I'm just on a daily basis, of course, like one being the only OT in a large agency can create a lot of burnout, and like having to go outside. Like, luckily Quinn is at the agency once a week. So I get that built-in mentorship. So I don't have to go outside and actually seek those services. But that can be tiresome, you know, being the only person doing this on a day-to-day basis and constantly having to over explain what you do, even though you've done it a million times before, explaining like kind of the role of OT and why it's important. Again, just like our agency, I love the St. Pat's so much. They're so wonderful, and the growth is so needed at this point, and hopefully we can work to get that. And then just like doing the boots on the ground work, you know, like working with clients, you know, there's always challenges that come up on a day-to-day basis, you know, of prioritizing your own mental health when you're focusing so much on others' mental health and wellness. That's a constant challenge that, you know, you're working with. And then the salary, like, I would say this as a challenge, but then also a success, is that, you know, obviously salaries tend to be lower at nonprofit agencies that, you know, can only do so much sometimes with the services that they have to offer you. But in the recent months, my salary had grown, and that's to the work of not only like that I have been doing to like show the benefits of this and like why it needs to become more sustainable, but then also the other mental health OTs within the St. Louis area also strongly advocating for an increase in salaries for us across the board. And, you know, we're a community there. And I'm so thankful for that, because like, this work is not, you can't do it in a silo. So just having them you know, also be advocates for this is a big success.
Yeah, I really want to highlight what Serena just said. So one of the things we actually did around salary that Serena did was we reached out to the other mental health OTs working at other agencies in St. Louis and said, can you share your salary information with us? Because one of the agencies in the St. Louis area has had OT historically for a very long time. And they've been really great about doing regular studies to make sure that their OTs are paid at sort of the market rate. And so we knew that their OTs were paid fairly. And so Serena was able to use that as justification to actually get her salary moved to market rate.
Congrats!
That's a huge victory.
Yes.
Huge. And I'm so glad you got a raise. Yes. And then, you know, and it's not just you, you're representing all of us, right? And our value. So what a fantastic idea. I'm going to bring that up to our community of practice over here to see if we can, you know, kind of exchange notes and use that to leverage each other.
Right? Yeah, that's why we often think we shouldn't discuss salary, but that's why it's really important that like it was, and we knew this because like, the OT at the other agency is a friend of mine, and he happened to share with me that they had done this. And, you know, it's when I was able to say to Serena, hey, I know that they've moved him to market rate. And so, you know, that like that sharing of salary information is essential.
Yeah, that's how especially if that's how we remain underpaid, right? Because we just don't know. And we're sort of in the dark of in terms of what our value should really be. So such great advice. Thank you for
Absolutely.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Any other career advice for our followers who might be interested in following your path or following in your footsteps?
I would say if you're really passionate about this work, like one, reaching out to people, kind of like you were talking about earlier, like finding that mentorship is so vital in this profession and in this type of OT practice. Also finding those hands-on experiences, whether it be a field work or a fellowship, like I could speak for days about how beneficial my fellowship experience was and like molding me into the OT that I am today. Seeking out those opportunities, and like the worst you can hear is a no. And then you move on to the next one and send them an email.
Yes. Great advice.
Yeah. I think I fall along those lines and I say, persevere. There are so many agencies out there that in St. Louis alone, I can speak to who I know are interested in OT. And I've had students who wanted to work in the mental health arena, and maybe that job wasn't open right when they graduated school. And so they took a different one. And then, you know, they just kind of said like, oh, I already, you know, I'm in this cushy job. It's fine. I'm not gonna come back to take that one when it opens up. And so like, you know, you just have to like, if that's what you want, that's totally fine. But if you do want that mental health job and you do want to be in these sort of innovative community-based organizations, like you just have to be willing to take those risks and make those leaps. And it may, like I said, it may mean taking a PRN job for a little while. It may mean taking less of a salary for a little while and doing some work with an academic institution, or, you know, doing both PRN and this community mental health job. There's a million ways that you can make it work if you're willing. And I think I just see so many students who say they want to do it and then they're not willing to take the risk when push comes to shove. And the ones that I know that have been successful have taken that leap of faith.
Yeah. And I know I've certainly had positions where I started as a volunteer. I started running one group for the agency, right? And over time, again, you demonstrate your value, they see the value, and it becomes a no-brainer decision on, you know, both ends. So there has to be that commitment, right? And that willingness to kind of take a more non-traditional route into this, you know, career path.
Yeah, find ways to pay the bills while you pursue your passion. Kind of like being a starving artist in a way.
Yes.
Now, I feel that right now.
Even after the raise.
You'll find it.
Yeah.
How about any common myths. Are there any myths or misconceptions about your role or your jobs that you'd like to demystify today?
Yes, my number one, if I could tell everyone, the myth that I think that all other OT things somehow think is that mental health is easy. Right. There's this myth out there that like, oh, you don't have to lift people. You don't have to transfer people. You don't have to know like all the lines and leads and medical knowledge. It's easy. I'm here to tell you, mental health is not easy. Like it is taxing in very different ways. It is constantly being on. It is communicating in the most complex ways that you can imagine. It is thinking on your feet constantly. It is never knowing what is coming down the path. And so just because it's a slower pace of therapy, just because it's not medical model, it is no walk in the park. Let me tell you, it takes just as much skill as a medical model therapist. I just want to say that because I think so often that is not thought of.
I agree 1000%.
That's my soapbox for the day.
Yeah, I agree, man. Yeah, I don't know so much about like the practice, but maybe like the population. Like I think that maybe how people perceive people who experience homelessness has a lot of stigma around it. And maybe a lot of people have thoughts about why someone is in those types of situations. But I've met people of all different walks of life that like, you know, you're only one step away from being homeless at sometimes, you know, it's a car accident, it's losing a loved one. Like there's so many different ways that this may affect people, that I think that, you know, coming to people with some grace and with some empathy is so important. And knowing that like, some of my clients are the best people that I have ever met, and seeing them grow and like the journeys that they're on, like there's nothing more special to me, regardless of like, you know, maybe how they got to that point in their life.
Yeah. Well said. And really, my favorite thing I think about my job is I get a lot of gratitude from all, you know, from everyone, not just my clients, but also my coworkers. You know, I get thanked all the time. I don't know, I get cookies all the time. People are always bringing me things. And, you know, so it's really a gift, you know, I feel like I'm getting everything that I'm putting out there. So there's something about that, about my role and about my job that I'm, you know, super thrilled about. And I know not all OTs have that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, ladies, I am so grateful to both of you for, again, spending this time and sharing with us your wealth of information. Is there anything else that you'd like to share? I know that's pretty general, but anything else that maybe we haven't covered?
I can't think of anything. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. It was so much fun. It was good to, you know, rehash everything and just, I don't know, it's renewed a passion that I already have. But I just like love collaborating and sharing these things. It just keeps the spark going.
It does. And I'm tickled by the fact that the three of us are on the same, you know, in the same space together. And we're talking about, we're like-minded people who are passionate about the same stuff. And we can probably talk for days about our clients and our groups and the different things that we do. So
absolutely.
I'm just extra thrilled. So if our listeners were interested in staying in touch, calling, reaching out, networking, right? Asking you questions. Is that okay if they do? And how do they do so?
Yeah, absolutely. The best way for me is via email. My WashU email is the best. It's my last name. So that's TYMINSKIQ@WUSTL, which is WUSTL.edu.
Yeah, and I agree the same way. Via email is the best way for me. And my email is my last name, BLANK.MySERENA@gmail.com.
Wonderful. And we'll list all of your contacts and any resources that you provide, articles you've written, anything about your work. Yes, that definitely. That's how I learned about Quinn. And I was like, all right. I need her. I need to get her on her. I need to get to know her.
Thank you.
So thank you again for sharing your work, your incredible work. You're doing such great work out there in St. Louis. The unhoused of St. Louis are so fortunate to have a wonderful occupational therapy department and program that's thriving over there at St. Patrick's.
Yeah, well, we're so excited to have someone in LA who's doing the same thing and have a great connection. So we love that.
Yes. Please be in touch. Now, you know, I tell everyone, now we're stuck with each other.
Yes, that's not a bad
it's
thing.
It's too late. No. Yeah. So thank you again and have a great rest of your day.
You too. I got to go put a kiddo to bed.
Yeah.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.